is Jay from 28 Days, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
Renegade economists say yeah.
Economics for activists. Economics is being made. Economics. These are the tools activists need. How can we calculate it? What motivates them? Why do people spend money? Understand the basics to economics.
This week we talk about tax havens. Tax havens. How can you dodge your right to share with the rest of the community? That's what the laws, the tax laws, have created for those in the know. Let's expose it. Let's see what is being done about it here on the Renegade Economists. Welcome to the Renegades. You're with Carl Fitzgerald here on 3CR. We're flying thick and fast into the heart of issues that affect your wallet. And goodness me, what are we looking for? Competition or cooperation? Is it black? Is it white? Is it left? Is it right? Is it either or? What do you want? How do you see it? Do we need to have black and white? Do we need one or the other? Is there a way where we can have the best of both worlds, where cooperation can coexist with competition? So reward for effort can come through, but a sense of equity throughout the community is ensured. And that's what we hear about on the Renegade Economist, to talk about the carrot that can create this community cohesion. We all feel that there's something intrinsically wrong with the system, and our view is that it is the goddamn tax system that is to blame. Yes, it's known as the ugliest thing. There's 28,000 million pages of it, and nobody wants to look at it. What a great plan. Let's just turn everyone's brains off. And let's back that up with another statement. Economics is the dismal science. Yeah, let's just focus on social and health policy. That's what progressive movements traditionally have done, and look where it's got us. Can you believe foreign aid is for foreign investors? And still, after donating US $1 trillion since World War II, the answer is to throw millions and billions more dollars at developing countries, as if that is going to solve the story. Obviously, there's something fundamentally wrong. We've talked about Vanuatu many times on this show, how the US Millennium Development Corporation has been brought in to bring into the fold of the Western Alliance this formerly non-aligned state of Vanuatu. And they've brought them into the fold through the use of foreign aid, through the promise of $55 million invested in 12 different infrastructure projects over the next few years. The ring road around the island is almost completed. And from that, the speculative class, the land banking elites, who buy with a click of a button from a hammock on their iPhone, are snapping up the most picturesque locations around the planet. Whether you're in the Grampians, whether you're at Inverloch, you name it, it's so easy just to buy and sell. And at least we have some defence here in Australia. We have some minuscule council rates on land. Unfortunately, it's been distorted to include a house tax on that, so you're penalised for improving your house. On top of that, we have some sort of land tax system to capture the natural upkick in land. Because, as most 3CR listeners will understand, the earth is only going to get more and more valuable in the future. But unfortunately, most environmental economists only look at forestry, at coal, at uranium, at, in some cases, carbon. In other cases, the electromagnetic spectrum. But what about all the other natural monopolies that are out there? What about the biggest one of all? Land. Land in prime locations. What about the continual privatization of more and more of the comments, of our DNA, of our knowledge base, of our songs. To hear the girl guides can't sing their traditional brownie song around the campfire is just beyond belief. They have to pay some well-to-do speculator a royalty to do so forth. This is the world of the neoliberal paradigm. This is the world of the toll booth economy. This is your future. Unless we can wake up and really start to chisel in onto the big picture, to talk in the language of the corridors of power. And that's what we're on about. We're talking about switching the tax system around here so that we don't get penalised for working. We are able to share the fruits of our labour with our family without any penalty. But if we do have the privilege of owning some of the planet, we should compensate the rest of the community for doing that. And yes, ladies and gents, again, I was outraged. Out in Hillside, which is in Keilor in the northeast of Melbourne, I was on the periphery of Melbourne sprawl on Saturday afternoon, off to buy Tara a $31 playground swing slide set. $31 on eBay, a real score. Well done, Miss Rayner. And from that, I saw a garage sale in every street. And people were trying to hawk, you name it. They were trying to sell it. They've obviously mortgaged themselves up to the eyeballs out there. As well, I also noticed that in nearly every street, down Royal Parade, down Imperial Drive, down Washington Street, there was at least one vacant block of land just sitting there, just twiddling its thumbs, just waiting for the neighbouring community to pay their taxes, to improve the roads, to improve the hospitals, to create an upkick in value to live in that community. And as a community gets stronger and stronger, the wages don't go up. The inflation doesn't really go down. The thing does go up is the land values. And that is economic rent. That is what rightfully should fund all of government and should inspire us to remove the 156 taxes that are killing you. Yes, you, Mr. Small Businessman, sitting there in a traffic jam wondering what on earth is going on in this planet. But yet, the Reserve Bank is unfazed as housing prices keep rising. That was my Thursday morning wake-up call. Goodness me, what a nightmare. Rick Battaglino from the Reserve Bank said that house prices would be boosted by increasing population growth and immigration, solid increase in household incomes, and substantial competition from the construction industry workers from the mining sector. Well, we've heard how much miners are paying in rent a couple of weeks ago on the show. We've heard how population growth pushes up our land prices and pushes down our wages. What a tragedy. People forget that wages are also forced down once we move beyond a natural immigration rate. But still, the most serious issue is that whilst they say solid increase in household incomes will continue, that will always be outstripped by higher land prices, by higher rents. And that's what we're looking at. Since World War II, the land values have increased tenfold compared to wages have barely plateaued. So that's the key point. If we capture that upkick in land values, we keep a lid on the house prices, so then there's less boom-bust economics going on. And from that, with less taxes, we don't pull our hair out every 3 months filling our GST paperwork. We can actually start up our own business because it's easier, it's cheaper, and the cost of our inputs is a lot lower. 20 to 30% we estimate with the drop in all of these taxes. There's all these compliance costs and deadweight costs that I could dazzle you with if you could see the graphs. But let's move on because there was a tragedy in my community. I got the text on Sunday afternoon that a friend couldn't visit us, come to our baby shower, because they just bought a house. and the land that sits on it. And I couldn't believe it. Of course, it would have to be a lawyer who knows better than anyone else. And they've gone out and bought a property right at the peak of the market. Did you notice, ladies and gents, that the clearance rate has dropped to 79%, below 80% for the first time? Have you noticed that we've got a record supply of properties hitting the market at the end of the year, as more and more people are trying to cash in at this boom period? Have you noticed that all year long the supply of properties going to auction has been crimped? It has been hoarded. It has been restricted to force exactly this situation. House prices to hit 500,000 plus. The day after, the real estate lobby coming out, well, $1 million. That's where it's going to be in the future. $1 million. Love it or leave it. You've got no option. Well, our friend Lewis Christopher from SQM Research, who we interviewed right at the top of this year, he was on, one of those currency affair type shows. And he's got a new weapon that you guys should be aware of. And it's called the Home Discounts Report. And it's an internet tool that tracks houses that have been on the market for 60 days or more. So if by chance you are absolutely desperate, you do have a lawyer's income and you can ignore the market, make sure you check this out. And what it does is it tracks properties that have been on the market for 60 days or more. By then, the vendors are starting to panic and the price, their offering price starts to drop. The auction is gone and you, the buyer, are sitting in a powerful position. And that is what we want. We want to return the power back to the buyers. The sellers have all the hoarding power, and that's what this land-based economic system can do. Return the balance sheet back towards those of us who want a roof over our head, the supposed human right.
Hey, this is Nick from Pinyao. You're listening to 3CR. Please support community radio and your local music scene. Subscribe now. Give money back to the people that give music to you.
1, 2, 3, 4. And this week we are interviewing Dr. Gregory Rawlings. You've heard me talk about his monstrosity of a report on the history of tax havens in Vanuatu. You'll remember that late last year there was a total economic undercover agent who stole the top secret tax records from one of the world's most prestigious tax havens in Liechtenstein. And this set off a snowball around the world where people could really investigate what was going on with all these tax havens. And so with that, hundreds, thousands of the world's most elite tax dodgers were pulled into the spotlight. And from that, people really started to look at how on earth that is proper. How on earth can there be authorized theft like this from the community? How can those in the know hide their money and not pay anything back to the community? Especially when you hear week after week that our taxes fund the infrastructure that makes the land more valuable that we're trying to buy. And who's cleaning up on all that? All these tax dodgers who are out there and away. So apparently this former Liechtenstein tax official is living in Australia under witness protection. We wish him all the best and hope he has a very sunny vista amongst his outlook, because he's set off a snowball that all us activists could really only hope to understand. So let's kick back and listen to Mr. Gregory Rawlings as he describes to us a bit about tax havens and how they've evolved.
Welcome as it to comes the up. Economists. We have with us Dr. Gregory Rawlings. He's a lecturer at the Department of Anthropology, Gender and Sociology at the University of Otago in New Zealand. Welcome, Gregory.
Thank you.
Excellent. So you are an expert on tax havens and their evolution. Can you start off by explaining to us how a tax haven works?
A tax haven works through offering a legal regime and financial and banking system which is attractive to international or mobile money, or money that can escape from the regulatory borders of major onshore states. And tax havens provide a so-called safe haven for that money. And also don't levy any taxes on any income earned on that money in the offshore jurisdiction. So they operate through offering not a deregulated market, but a market with much looser and reduced regulations, and they certainly offer much reduced taxes. Sometimes those taxes can be very low. For example, in Guernsey, the tax rate is 20%, or there may be no taxes whatsoever. And those offshore centres are referred to as pure tax havens. They don't have any form of income or direct taxation at all. And those jurisdictions, those tax havens include Bermuda, Cayman Islands and Vanuatu. So they really offer an attractive regulatory and fiscal regime for globally mobile money.
And if you're an investor, how does it actually work for you? You set up this company over in Vanuatu and it operates out of that country, but how on earth does the cash get back to that lucky individual?
It's varied through time. Up until the mid-1980s, it was relatively easy to use tax havens in the sense that you could establish offshore trusts and companies, companies known as international business corporations or IBCs. These were protected by certain layers of financial secrecy, so it was very difficult for tax authorities like the Internal Revenue Service or the ATO to find out information about the beneficial owners of those companies. And it was possible to set up structures whereby that money could be loaned back to the investors who had settled it abroad in the tax haven in the first place. So it wasn't actually classified as income. It could be classified as a capital payment or a loan, and that isn't necessarily taxed. And that money would simply be wired back to the beneficiary of that arrangement whenever they wanted it. But since the mid-1980s, those kind of arrangements have been increasingly regulated against in major OECD countries like Australia, the United States, and the UK to a certain extent. So it's no longer possible for people to use offshore finance centres in that sort of legal way. It's much more challenging for individuals to use tax havens in a legal way. It's still quite possible for large multinational corporations or transnational corporations to use offshore finance centres legally, and they're really interested in pooling sort of globally mobile transnational money in particular jurisdictions to take advantage of their tax-free financial regimes.
So the circle is tightening on this form of tax dodging, this form of avoiding your commitments to your community.
Evidence that merchants, governments and entrepreneurs had sent money abroad for safekeeping for hundreds of years. Even in antiquity, we see some Greek islands operating as financial service city-states. to safeguard money from, say, Athens or some of the other Greek city-states. So we see the use, we see the movement of funds, the movement of capital back in antiquity. And this carried through into the modern period as well. So, for example, in the French Revolution, aristocrats fleeing the collapsing French monarchy started to bank their money in Geneva. But the first real emergence of what we could identify as a modern tax haven really emerged in the 1920s and 1930s, when a number of wealthy Americans and British individuals and companies started to use the likes of Jersey, Newfoundland, which at the time was a separate country, separate from Canada, which it was later absorbed into in 1948, but at the time it was a separate country which had its own very low tax rate, and territories like the Bahamas. American companies and individuals started to open offshore trusts and bank accounts in those jurisdictions. These jurisdictions provided alleged relief for high taxes, which had been progressively introduced into industrializing Europe and the United States from the early 19th century onwards. So from the early 19th century onwards, you get this consolidation of the fiscal state, whereby governments in countries like America, Britain, Australia, start to introduce taxes on income, and they introduce taxes on higher income earners. In order to avoid these taxes, these same higher income earners in the 1920s and 30s start sending money abroad to places like the Bahamas, Switzerland, and the Channel Islands. Then, at the end of the Second World War, the Bretton Woods Agreement. Amongst 44 countries, which agree to regulate foreign exchange trading. So it's not possible. It becomes increasingly difficult to send and receive money abroad without central bank permission. So, for example, if you were an Australian importer and you wanted to import $1 million worth of cars from the United States, you'd have to go to the Reserve Bank and get permission from the Reserve Bank to send that $1 million to the US to purchase those cars. That's no longer the situation today, but it was the situation up until the mid-1980s, in Australia at least. You would require central bank permission to buy and sell foreign currencies. But the Bretton Woods Agreement didn't apply in a number of British territories, of a number of smaller countries which were not signatories to the agreement. They existed and operated outside of this multilateral global framework, which was designed to reduce the negative impacts of financial services speculation and trading, and therefore they could offer particular corporate regulations, banking regulations, and so forth, which was very conducive to funds which sought to evade these national regulations and so on. So in the 1960s and 70s, you begin to have a proliferation of offshore finance centres and tax havens. It's partly brought about by British colonial policy. The United Kingdom has always viewed its colonies and territories not as parts of the United Kingdom, but as foreign countries under the jurisdiction of the Crown. And one consequence of that colonial policy is that those same foreign countries under the jurisdiction of the Crown colonies, were able to write their own tax laws. They were able to establish their own financial systems. And they were also free to set tax rates at whatever level they liked. In many cases, those levels were zero. So you have in the 1960s and 1970s a number of British territories, the New Hebrides, what is today Vanuatu, Bermuda, Cayman Islands, the Bahamas, really emphasising their status as tax-free ports, where all manner of business could be conducted in regimes of relative freedom, but also relative secrecy and confidentiality. So that's where you begin to that's where the tax havens really begin to emerge back in the 1960s and 1970s. As wealthy individuals and large multinational corporations sought, one, to avoid high taxes levied in OECD countries, and also to circumvent foreign exchange regulations in operation in those major industrialized markets.
Bringing things up to recent reforms, Gordon Brown has been wringing his hands talking about tax havens and trying to outlaw them. And it seems like the G20's made some significant moves this year, in particular with the help of the OECD, to up the standards of transparency and the exchange of information back to those to the head tax officers of countries such as Australia. How have you seen this policy debate, and is it really going to make a significant difference?
As a consequence of the global financial crisis, there has been a renewed emphasis on ending regimes of bank and financial secrecy, and one of the ways that that can be achieved is through encouraging, or in some cases compelling, offshore finance centres to enter into tax information exchange agreements with OECD member states, and also other countries which are sometimes detrimentally affected by tax haven use, such as India and China, which are not members of the OECD but which have rapidly growing economies and whose investors tend to use tax havens to manage their investment funds, or in some cases channel profits out of those emerging markets. In terms of its relative success, I think that what it is doing is that it is certainly, it's encouraging, it's setting new benchmarks and new standards of financial transparency and protocols for exchanging information. It is becoming secrecy is no longer a viable commodity in the world's marketplace. It used to be, countries could market their banking systems, could market their financial services on the basis that all transactions would be kept anonymous and secret. That's no longer the case. In fact, a country marketing itself on secrecy and anonymity and excessive confidentiality would come under would risk sanctions if it was to go down that route today. So what the peers have done is said that secrecy is no longer acceptable. But at the same time, these peers, these tax information exchange agreements, have a number of conditions attached to them which make them challenging to enforce. So for example, if a tax authority wanted information about a taxpayer's beneficial interests located in a tax haven, that tax authority may have to get a court order from the jurisdiction concerned. Now, those court orders can take 3 or 4 weeks to 3 or 4 weeks or even longer to obtain, and in that time, the money may have already left the jurisdiction. It may have already disappeared. It may have gone somewhere else. So it's almost too late. But these tiers do require quite a high evidence threshold before tax authorities, before revenue agencies can actually request information from tax havens. And that's probably one of the reasons why offshore centres have been increasingly compliant and willing to agree to these exchange of information provisions, because there are enough safeguards in them to prevent a sort of a systematic exchange of information between themselves and the OECD member states.
Dr. Rawlings, I knew there was something hidden in there for the powers that be to escape again, and this was just a short-term good look for the press. So I thank you very much for your time.
And there we have it, Dr. Gregory Rawlings. talking through there for us on tax havens and what's going on. And what is going on? Well, you just heard it, that time delays are one of the limitations of these new tax haven review laws, and also the other is the high level of evidence required in order to make any of Gordon Brown's dreams come true. I hope you're checking out for Real Estate for Ransom. The posters are all over the city. Red Simons was commenting on it on 774 the other morning. Yes, why is real estate held for ransom? That is the key issue we're on about here. And the other one is, I hope some of you can come to the film competition screening night on this very evening, starting at about 7:30. So if you get down to the Order of Melbourne, level 2/401 Swanson Street, that's the place to be to find out how the war on creativity is crimping our world. All right, it is now time for Raise the Roof. Thanks very much for listening to The Renegade Economist. Earthsharing.org.au is where you can check out the show notes to any of today's key topics. See ya.